Hello and welcome back to a fresh new season of Trashy Divorces, everybody's favorite good podcast about bad relationships.
You feeling 22, Alicia? I am
so feeling 22. My name's Alicia and Stacy, my cohort here. Who are you bringing everybody today to kick off this brand new season?
You know, I thought we could kick off with a sassy divorces.
Ooh, I love it.
Today we're talking about Judge Judy herself, Judy Scheindlin, who is as irrepressible in real life as she is on television. But before we jump in, Alicia, do I spy a magic mirror full of our newest amazing patrons?
You do, you do. Even on our off-ish weeks, we do keep the stories going over at patreon.com/trashydivorces. We are ever so grateful to our newest supporters who have joined us over there. Big love to Elizabeth M., Stephanie S., Lisa T., Librarian Barbie,
Courtney K., Kimberly, Jenna, and Heather C.
Thanks again to our new supporters and our sustaining supporters.
Alicia, what do we need to do to get in front of America's favorite judge?
We gotta go, go, go. Oh, Stacy, tell me about Judge Judy. Oh, I can't even wait.
Bringing the gavel down. Judith Susan Bloom was born on October 21st, 1942 in Brooklyn, New York. Her father, Murray, was a dentist. She's described him as the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Aw, daddy's girl.
Judy said that her mother, Edith, ran the household and was a meat and potatoes kind of gal. This is so like classic Brooklyn 1940s. Murray and Edith.
I love Murray and Edith.
I know, it's amazing. Judy had one younger brother, David, and a large extended family, as you would expect. When Judy was 8 years old, she had an experience on Yom Kippur that stuck with her. She had gone with her family to help bring her father home from the synagogue, and as they returned to their apartment building, her grandfather veered away from the elevator that they would ride every day and instead went toward the stairs. She asked him why he wasn't taking the elevator with them, and he explained, "On Yom Kippur, we atone for everything we've done wrong in the past year. We don't eat, and we don't use electricity." Young Judy heard this and has described how she interpreted that. Quote, "That translated in my 8-year-old mind, if you do the right thing all year, you can eat on Yom Kippur and take the elevator."
Just never have to atone for anything.
Life hack.
8-year-old figured it out. Yep. Ding, ding, ding.
She told the Archive of American Television that she always wanted to be a lawyer. Her father would talk to her about world politics. He felt that his daughter had a gift for gab, clearly, and that she would make a great politician. She believed that in order to become a politician, she would need to be a lawyer first. As she got older, she realized she would be a terrible politician because she prefers the, quote, ability to make a decision unencumbered by what other people think.
I like Judy.
Excellent trait for a judge, terrible trait for a politician. But she knew that her goals were out of the norm for a young girl in the 1940s, early 50s. She said that when she was coming of age, quote, "You were either a school teacher or a nurse, and you did those two things until you married someone who could afford to support you. Those were the rules. And if you broke those rules, it was an oddity."
Wow. Different times, kind of.
Kind of. Mm-hmm. She graduated from James Madison High School in Brooklyn in 1960. This is the same high school that Ruth Bader Ginsburg had graduated from 10 years earlier. Yes. After that, Judy attended American University in Washington, D.C., where she majored in government and public administration. The program she was in was a combined program with the Washington College of Law. So the students in the program began their law school classes at the end of their third year. Judy graduated with her J.D. in 1965, and she was the only woman in her graduating class.
You're kidding. Mm-mm. Wow.
She did not mind this at all. When asked what challenges she faced as a young woman at that time going into the law profession, she told the Archive of American Television, quote, "I didn't find that I had any challenges. I was the only woman in my freshman class. There were 126 people and only one woman. And I found that ratio just perfect. It was fine with me.
I got nothing to atone for."
She passed the bar the same year that she graduated and started looking for a job. She recalls that she was repeatedly asked, "How fast do you type?" Yeah. She said her first job after law school was, quote, essentially administrative at a cosmetics firm, while my male counterpart got to practice actual law. Obviously frustrated and unsatisfied, she left that firm after a couple of years. Instead of looking for another job, she decided to start a family. But unsurprisingly, this soon left Judy feeling frustrated and unsatisfied as well. She said, I found I wasn't happy being defined as someone's wife or someone's mother. If being a female lawyer in the 1960s was going against the cultural norm, being unmarried would have been even more unusual. With 1 year left of law school, Judy married a prosecutor in juvenile court, that must be a fun job, named Ronald Levy in 1964. In order to get married and finish her law degree, she ended up transferring to the New York Law School for her final year. This was the expected thing to do, but she kind of immediately noticed some big differences. She said she had to focus on the household first, which gave her less time for studying, and the New York Law School was much less welcoming to women.
Yikes!
Well, she says, New York Law School didn't have as enlightened faculty as the Washington College of Law. They made me feel about as welcome as a skunk at a lawn party. It was not a nurturing environment for me there. After her rough start in the workforce, she gave in to societal and family pressure and decided to have children and become the traditional stay-at-home mom.
It's going to go great.
Judy had a daughter, Jamie, in 1966, and her son, Adam, was born in 1968. Except that just didn't work for future Judge Judy. So Judy went back to work, this time in the family court of Manhattan. How do you think her husband felt about having a career wife?
Probably real proud.
Oh, was he? You think?
Yeah,
you think
he
so?
Was there on Accept Your Award as woman in the court day.
Yeah,
all dressed up with the kids.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, Ronald was not supportive of his wife's career ambitions, and eventually, as you would expect, that caused a great deal of friction in the marriage. When the lack of support for her career and pressure to stay at home got to be too much, Judy separated from her husband. They divorced in 1976 after 12 years of marriage. Judy would later tell Fox News, my first husband is a lovely, lovely man, but he always viewed my job as a hobby, and there came a time where I resented that.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I bet.
Gender dynamics, mid-century, not great. This is a good spot to take a break, just like Judy did from being married. And when we come back, we'll meet her second and her third husband.
Oh, I do love a remarriage. See you on the flip.
Sibling fights are unavoidable, but what if every fight you had was under a microscope on a global scale? That's the reality for brothers Prince William and Prince Harry. They were each other's closest friends and allies since the death of their mother, but that all began to crack as they married and took wildly different approaches to their royal duties.
Wondery's podcast, Dis and Tell, is hosted by comedians Sydney Battle and Matt Bellassai. Each episode unpacks one of pop culture's most iconic celebrity feuds, and they recently took a deeper look into the real reason William versus Harry started.
It's actually much bigger than these two brothers, stretching back into the history of the British monarchy. Did their feud start with the royal family's mistreatment of Meghan Markle, or was it something that started much earlier?
Follow Dis and Tell on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Okay, you've teased me. We're going to marry, get divorced, and then marry the same person. This is my favorite trashy divorces phenomenon.
Yes, so post-divorce, it would not be long before Judy met her next two husbands. Defense attorney Jerry Scheindlin. Jerry recalled meeting Judy for the first time, which happened to be at a bar. He says, quote, I just finished trying a murder case as a defense lawyer. She was a prosecutor. There was a reporter from the New York Post there at the bar, and I was speaking to him about the case. Judy came walking in and put her finger in my face and said, "And who is this?" I said, "Lady, get your finger out of my face." We've been together ever since.
That's a meet cute for sure.
So who is Jerry Scheindlin? Gerald Jerry Scheindlin was born November 19, 1933 in New York City. He served in the Army during the Korean War, and then he got his bachelor's degree before going to law school. He graduated from Brooklyn Law School in 1959. When he and Judy first met, he was a partner at Adler Berg and Scheindlin law firm, where he was a defense attorney in criminal cases. Jerry was separated from his wife when they met, but he was still technically married. He and his first wife had three children together. I'm sure there were a lot of reasons not to race out of being married. In 1980, Jerry was appointed a U.S. administrative law judge.
Oh, wow.
And in 1983, he became a criminal court judge. Eventually, he would rise even higher in his career. And this sounds different than it is, but I'll just say it as written. By 1986, Jerry Scheindlin was a trial judge in the New York Supreme Court. Okay, except New York's nomenclature for its courts is weird, and Supreme Court is your baseline court.
Sure.
And the New York Court of Appeals is the
Supreme
highest
court. Courts. Yeah,
it's confusing. This is in the news a lot lately, and when you see that New York Supreme Court is doing a thing, it's not like SCOTUS of New York. It's kind of the baseline trial courts. Anyway.
Handy tip.
In Marlo Thomas and Phil Donahue's 2020 book, What Makes a Marriage Last, 40 Celebrated Couples Share With Us the Secrets to a Happy Life, good title, Judy revealed that Jerry was not in any hurry to marry her or even to divorce his wife.
Oh.
She wrote or said, "I actually had to drag him to the altar. He had no intention of divorcing his wife, even though they'd been separated for 3 or 4 years. After we were together for about a year, I said, 'I want to see your divorce in the newspaper, or don't bother calling again.' I love her."
Good on you, Judy.
I love her so much. Jerry adds, "I said, 'I'm not going to do that.' So she whipped out a calendar and said, 'Pick a date now.'"
This is fantastic.
That was all the convincing he needed. So they, you know, got married in 1977. Their careers were going strong. Their marriage was going great for more than a decade.
Excellent.
Until Murray, Judy's beloved father, passed away. Judy struggled a great deal with her father's death. Again, greatest thing since sliced bread. She felt that Jerry was not supporting her in the way that she needed him to support her in her grief. In 1990, the year that Murray passed away, Judy confronted her husband about him not meeting her needs during this difficult era of her life. In the documentary, What Makes a Marriage Last, Judy shared, "In a desperate need of role reversal, I said, 'I've been taking care of you for 12 years. Now it's your turn to take care of me.' And he was totally unaccustomed to that role. I wasn't asking for anything unreasonable, and he wasn't being unreasonable saying that he really didn't know how to do that. He was 55 and had lived a certain way all his life. He couldn't even conceptualize taking over that role. He just couldn't." Jerry added, "What she said was, 'Unless you change, we can't stay together.' I said, 'Tell me what you want me to do. You can't just say, take care of me. What does that mean? Do you want me to carry you from place to place? Do you want me to buy you things? Do you want me to feed you? Do you want me to keep you warm? What you have to do is tell me, use your words and tell me what you want me to do to take care of you.' She said, 'Just take care of me.' And I said, 'I don't know how to do that.'" Jerry continues, "She said to me, 'If you can't maneuver this, I'm going to divorce you.' And I said, 'Oh yeah, I dare you.'"
No, and don't. No, don't.
Don't dare judge Judy.
No, never.
Jerry. The next day, he continues, "I got divorce papers." The next day. So that was the end of that.
That's ruthless.
Judy quips, "I just had to come to terms with the fact that men of that generation are different. They expect, even if they have no right, they expect to be taken care of or catered to. Like they say, don't try to teach a pig to sing. It doesn't work. And it just annoys the pig."
That's a great saying.
But almost immediately, Jerry knew that he had made a mistake by letting Judy get away. In the Thomas and Donahue book, he said, "I missed her presence the very first week that we were separated. It was the first time in years that we didn't see each other every single day. It was such a strange experience." Judy felt the same. "I like being married. I missed him," she says.
"Don't know what you got till it's gone."
Yep. And so Judy said yes to going to dinner with Jerry. She even told him about a bad date that she had recently gone on. The two realized they wanted to be together and began spending all of their free time together. In the documentary, What Makes a Marriage Last, Jerry said, "I picked her up from work at family court one day, and we were walking through downtown Manhattan. Suddenly I said to her, 'This is silly. I'm uncomfortable being with you all the time and not being married to you. Let's get married again.' She said, 'Well, how are we going to do that?' I said, 'The clerk's office is right up the street. We can go in and get a license.'" So romantic, but Judy agreed to marry Jerry again.
No fuss, no muss.
When asked about the ceremony, Jerry recalled, "To me, he said, 'Do you take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife forever, in good times and bad, in sickness and in health?' I said, 'Yes.' He looks at Judy and says, 'Do you take this man to be your husband?' She says, 'Yes.' He says, 'In good times or bad?' And she looks right at him and says, 'In good times or forget it.'"
Sassy.
Irrepressible. Despite her extremely strong character and unequal treatment early in her career, Judy Scheinlin tends to downplay the obstacles that she had to overcome. It was in 1982, when there were still relatively few female judges, that Mayor Ed Koch appointed her to a seat as a judge in family court. She acknowledges that things have improved a great deal from her early years in law. She recalls a conference from the mid-80s for New York State judges. It was during a presentation from a commission on gender bias in the court that a lawyer was explaining to the primarily male judges in the room the ways in which their comments made in court were disparaging to female legal professionals. During an interview with her alma mater, New York Law School, she told the story, quote, "It was things that male judges would say to lawyers. 'Don't wear pants in my courtroom. I like women in skirts.'"
Oh.
"It's demeaning as a lawyer." This is Judy again. "Back then, it was sort of standard fare." So while this presenter was trying to educate the judges about appropriate behavior, a table of attendees started yelling disparaging remarks at her. "You'd be better off in skirts, too." That sort of thing.
Oh, no, no, no.
So the piece continues. Judge Scheinlin remembers with crystal clarity what happened next. The presenter looked straight at the rowdy table of yelling judges. Amazing, right? And said, quote, "Perhaps a whole generation has to die off."
Go fry asparagus.
It left a mark on Judge Scheinlin, who responds, she was right.
Yeah.
Woof. In 1993, Judy got national recognition when CBS's news program 60 Minutes did a profile on her and how she ran her courtroom. Her story was then picked up by the Los Angeles Times, and it was those profiles that got her noticed and eventually approached to star in her own reality courtroom series. Even with these successes prior to her fame, she says she doesn't want to wear the label of feminist. Quote, "I don't feel as if anything that's happened to me in my life was sidetracked because I was a woman. And as for the feminist label, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't know what that means. I actually don't know what that means." Then, as a joke referring to the enormous salary that she then had as a TV judge, she said, "Do I want equal pay with men? Absolutely not." And just to put that in perspective, in 2013, Judge Judy Scheinlin was receiving $47 million a year.
$47 million?
None of her male counterparts in television even came close. The next highest salaries in non-scripted television were Jon Stewart, $30 million, Matt Lauer, $25 million, and Jay Leno, $20 million a year.
Why do you need to be a feminist when you're already a deity?
She had to fight for that salary, though. Even after her phenomenal television success, it still was not always easy to be paid and treated the way that she believed she deserved at that level of, you know, think of all the revenue she's bringing in for the network. In the early seasons of the show, she was serious about her salary negotiations. I would not want to be on the other side of the table negotiating salary with Judge Judy. But as the show's...
You're what she wants. I'm
exactly.
Good.
Exactly. As the show's ratings and popularity continued to rise, she demanded that her salary match that. Not unreasonable. When CBS was hesitant to pay her accordingly, she told CBS executives after a decade of doing the show...
Oh, goody.
"We should be partners.
Yeah.
I can do this program without you. Good luck. You can't do it without me."
Brutal. I love it.
So this is her advice to all women negotiating for better pay.
Okay, tell me.
You have to make yourself indispensable.
Yep.
And that is irrespective of what you do. Once you've done that and have leverage, make a reasonable demand and know what the commodity is worth.
Perfect. Yep,
perfect. Okay, this is a great spot to take our next break. And we're going to come back for the second marriage and the current events in the life of Judge Judy.
Love it. Back in a minute.
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it.
Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album.
Pop Apologists.
Pop Apologists.
All right, Stacey, take me home.
I guess this is technically her third marriage, but her second marriage to Jerry.
Sure.
After their brief divorce, the Shinelands have been happily married and have found a way to work through the challenges of balancing all of life's demands and needs. They walked back down the aisle in 91.
Holy cats. So they weren't divorced that long. Aw.
Not at all. And it was soon afterward that they had a lot more to balance. In 1996, Judge Judy premiered. Neither of them had any idea or expectation of the level of success the show was going to have. Judy initially agreed to do it just to make things more financially comfortable for their family. She told People in 2021, "I was hoping we would have a 3 or 4 year run and that my husband and I would be able to afford a 2-bedroom apartment 1 block off the beach in Florida as a retirement place."
Yeah, I just wanted to retire, get a nice spot, be able to see the water every day.
She continues, "We were civil servants. We had 5 kids that were all educated. Most went to grad school. We tried to see to it that they weren't burdened with a lot of debt."
Very reasonable, modest goals.
Totally. Little did they know that the show would not stop filming until the year of our Lord, 2021.
Wow.
In total, there were 25 seasons and 6,280 episodes of Judge Judy.
Holy cats.
People could not get enough of Judge Judy and her no-nonsense approach. It was frequently ranked the highest-rated broadcast show in daytime television and in syndication. Judy quickly became a household name and seemed to become rock star famous almost overnight. As for making things financially comfortable, in fact, the show has made her tremendously wealthy. Her net worth is estimated to be $480 million, according to Forbes.
Holy smokes. I guess she can afford a beach house now.
I'm hoping that she worked out that beach house thing with Jerry. So at her height, again, she had an annual salary of $47 million for much of the show's run. It has also earned her 5 Daytime Emmy Awards, including an Emmy Award for Lifetime Achievement in 2019. Again, 96. It was just going to run 3 or 4 years.
Incredible.
Although he is not nearly as famous as his wife, Jerry has also done his fair share of managing a courtroom on television. In 1999, he became the presiding judge on the People's Court.
You're joking.
I'm not. He replaced former New York City Mayor Ed Koch, who had first appointed his wife to the bench himself. Like,
what a spider web. Sure. I had no idea that he was People's Court and she was Judge Judy.
Yeah, he actually did just do it for a couple of years. Jerry told the Los Angeles Times in 1999 that Judy was the one who encouraged him to take the job. Quote, "She's the one who told me I should do it. If she had any reservations at all, I wouldn't have done it. I think that behind every great woman, there's a man. So I may be behind her now, but I also heard a rumor that behind every great man, there is a woman. So we'll have to wait and see how it plays out."
Interesting.
I like that they are like feistily competitive with each other and also not, right?
Yeah.
Jerry was on People's Court from 1999 to 2001. He probably ended up being the beach house purchaser.
Maybe. She's the one that buys the town.
She bought the mansion. Yeah. She's got a mansion up the road from his little 2-bedroom. So how do they keep their marriage and love alive after all these years? Judge Judy has not been shy about giving marital advice either. Shocker. Just like most things, it's a topic she has strong opinions about. One of the things she believes is most important for her and Jerry is keeping a good physique. In 2021, Judy described her reasoning behind the importance of staying in shape in an interview with People. I love this. This is so just self-knowing. We're both very surface people when it comes to that, she says. You know, if you fall instantaneously for somebody, that means there's a physical attraction. And people age. People, they change. You can either do it gracefully or you can say, I give up. And I, for myself, I said, I choose not to give up. I choose to stay fit. So don't even think about anything but staying looking as good as you can possibly look at this stage in your life. She continues, Jerry just celebrated his 90th wow. birthday, and I still like to look at him when he walks in the room.
Aww.
That's a key.
Aww.
Then she added, I don't have to tell him that more than once. He loves himself desperately. Another piece of important marital advice is to not suffocate each other. Judy told E! News, you don't spend 24 hours together because that's deadly.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Her hit series, Judge Judy, came to an end in May of 2021. The parting with CBS was not entirely pleasant. In fact, Judge Judy likened it to a divorce. She recently told the Wall Street Journal that CBS, quote, disrespected my creation.
Uh-oh.
She said, we had a nice marriage. It's going to be a Bill and Melinda Gates divorce.
Ooh.
But that would not be the end of her TV career. Judy Scheinlin launched a new show, Judy Justice, in November 2021 on Freevee. For its first season, Judy Justice won a 2022 Daytime Emmy for Outstanding Legal Courtroom Program.
Unbelievable.
Judy Justice is now in its third season. Some may wonder why she started a new show instead of just retiring, and her answer to that is quite simple. I don't play golf. I don't play tennis. I don't play mahjong. Why would I want to look for something I want to do when I already know what I like to do?
Totally makes sense.
Judge Judy has had many witty, clever, often biting comments and advice throughout the years. Some of her more entertaining words of wisdom are...
Oh, goody.
Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining.
It's raining, yep.
If you're a victim, I'm Dolly Parton. My grandmother always told me, beauty fades, but dumb is forever.
Yep.
I eat morons like you for breakfast. Sorry, you were going to drink some coffee.
I shouldn't have had been spitting.
Sorry. Spit take.
Do that again. I eat morons like you for breakfast.
I eat morons like you for breakfast.
Wow.
You're going to be crying before this is over.
Ooh. I would not, like, who even tries to lie to Judge Judy? If you're talking to Judge Judy, it's like you're talking to a deity. You can see through my soul. I have no reason to lie to you.
She did inform one perhaps reluctant appearant. I don't know if it was plaintiff or defendant. Is not an answer.
No, it is not.
Oh my God. And last but not least, I'm here because I'm smart, not because I'm young and gorgeous, although I am. Judge Judy has many, many wise words that anyone can benefit from, but few things she has said apply to as many people as this piece of advice from her. Many people, as I did in the beginning, get stuck with a job they don't really like. If you're not doing something that you love to do, find something that you love to do because it will make your whole life different.
Yes. Yes.
Trash Pandas, that is Judge Judy. That is Sassy Divorces for this week.
I love Sassy Divorces. What an incredible story.
I love it.
Do we have trash cans?
None.
Okay,
I give halos.
No, I... Halos.
Halos to her and...
Halos to Judy.
Jerry and their funny marriage. I mean, they clearly are just two characters married to... Like, I love everything about that story.
Really interesting. Stacey, well done.
Thanks.
I really like her. We're kicking this season off sassy.
Sassy. I know you like sassy.
I love sassy. Go forth and be sassy. Is my saying, y'all are more than welcome to take that along with you. Holy cats, we're so excited to be back for season 22. Thank you one and all for tuning in today and telling your friends about Trashy Divorces, for your support on Patreon, for your awesome emails, for your kind reviews as well. We thank the world of you. We're really excited about this season.
We're so happy to be back. And dear, dear friends, until we meet again this weekend.
Y'all, keep your hands clean.
But keep your hearts trashy and sassy.
Keep Judge Judy in your heart. Go forth and be sassy, friends. Big love, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. And thanks to you for listening. Trashy Divorces is a Hemlock Creatives production, created and produced right here in Atlanta, Georgia, by us, Stacy and Alicia, with a little research and writing help from the brilliant Melissa O.
Our art is by Sydney V. Smith. That's Sydney V. Smith at carbonmade.com. And our music is used with permission of Ratsy. Check her out at Ratsy's store on Instagram. And definitely drop into Ratsy's store anytime you're in Oberlin, Ohio.
You can contact us at trashydivorces@gmail.com or find us on the World Wide Web at trashydivorces.com.
If you need more trash candy in your life, our Patreon community includes some of the very best humans around and thousands of hours of bonus content at every level of support. Join the fun at patreon.com/trashydivorces.
Interested in some Trashy Divorces swag? Check out our merch shop and Trash Panda Enthusiasm Society at bit.ly/trashygear.
Want to advertise with us? Reach out to sales@advertisecast.com for more information.
And last but not least, come play with us on social media. I keep most of our Trashy Divorces Instagram hopping. Stacy and I share it up over on Facebook, including our Trashy Divorces podcast discussion group. Come join us over there, and thanks again, everybody, for listening.
Keep it trashy, y'all.